Andy McNamara from Sportsnet, our fantasy guru, and for this conversation, a bit of that, and also a look back on the 2020 NFL Draft down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Good morning, Andy. What is going on, sir?
Well, I'm good, man. All through the draft, you got 7 rounds in the books. There's fantasy implications, and actually just literally 3 minutes ago on Sportsnet.ca, part 1 of 2 of my fantasy football fallout from the draft went up again on Sportsnet.ca. So in that one today, I focus on wide receivers because there's a ton of them taken. And it's not just where these draft picks landed and what their fantasy upside could be. It's also how it impacts the veterans already on the team, because it really just folds out from there, right? You bring somebody in, okay, how does it affect the guy there? Does it benefit? Does it not? And so it's an early exploration of that.
He is Andy McNamara, as we mentioned, and I see on your Twitter about a minute ago as well. You are going to, hopefully the world's back to somewhat normal next year at this time, but you're going to go to Cleveland next year? Is that what I see?
Well, I'm going to plan on it. I'm going to, you know, if the world is somewhat back to normal, I go down every year for a Browns game, and God willing, if the draft is held in a somewhat normal situation as it has been in years past, I'll hitchhike to Cleveland if I have to. I'm going to get there. That's going to be a heck of a party if they can do that.
I love it. Okay, takeaways from the draft. I guess we'll begin with maybe the virtual aspect of Thursday's draft. I believe we talked to you Thursday morning, and I said to you kind of one of the most intriguing parts for me would be, what does this actually look like? A made-for-TV event. How are they going to make this go off? There's been some conspiracy theorists out there, and they can have their thoughts on whether or not this thing happened hours prior to the TV broadcast, because there was children and many things shown in different rooms involving coaches and GMs. But Andy, what did you make of the quote-unquote made-for-TV, the generic sports fan who might not watch all 7 rounds but might only watch the first round? What did you make of the work that we saw from the NFL on Thursday night?
I thought it was well done in the circumstances, right? Like, there wasn't really any glitches. There was the odd talking over each other or pausing. And Trey Wingo, I thought, did yeoman's work there, man, having to go person to person. And so it didn't necessarily flow as well as if you were side by side with people, obviously. But overall, I thought the analysis was still tremendous. You had that unique look into people's homes. Like, it was strange. You saw for everything from Dave Gettleman solo putting on a mask, right? And then and you had Joe Judge and what was like a weird sort of like warehouse looking thing, other people in their basements. And I think my favorite though had to be and he has to know he's doing it, the subtle troll job by Bill Belichick. Like, what a hero this guy is. He has his husky in his chair for one of the picks. His chair's completely empty for another pick. And I'm pretty sure, Will, in the third round, he re-enters the room in his pajamas. Those look like black velvet, like comfortable jammies that Bill was just like, hey, you can have the camera on. I'm gonna be cool. I think Bill Belichick was one of the highlights for me.
Yeah, and I think the other one that sticks out for a lot of people, we sure had some fun with it on our show, and that's the Mike Vrabel photo that it's been made famous in the opening round. Not sure still to this day what was going on in that back room, but that was quite the photo.
That was cool. It's like, wait a minute. And then the zoom-ins, and then Vrabel said, no, or someone would say, no, the guy's on a white stool or something. It was interesting. I'm not sure if you guys also saw when Jacob Eason, when he was being shown on video walking around waiting to be picked, as he plummeted, coming out of the back room, his brother, tarpless, putting on a shirt, and his girlfriend following him, fixing her hair. That was a curious look that was caught live, and Eason wasn't looking. So it's like, okay, maybe we got another story here. I don't know, but it was kids running around and all that and everything. It was very unique, and it sounds like Roger Goodell, they're going to try to incorporate some part of this into, even if the draft is back to normal next year. So I can see some more just behind this. It humanizes everything, right? It gave kind of that look instead of just in a boardroom at a stadium.
So before we move on to kind of what Fantasyland looks like and some of the particulars in the NFL draft, I just wanted to pick your brain on that, because you mentioned you know, we are living in a COVID-19 pandemic right now. We don't know what the fall is going to look like. And, you know, April also means the annual release of the NFL schedule, but they've come out and said that's going to be delayed until about May 7th, they hope. They don't want to release something and then have to pull back on it. But there's a lot of different layers here, lots of different contingency plans that they are laying out with a possible, you know, week five beginning in the middle of October. I guess just Andy, none of us are medical experts. We don't know what, you know, this life looks like in even 2 weeks. So for me to sit here and ask you to predict the fall is a bit silly, but the NFL is a league that has big enough TV contracts. They can play in empty stadiums. If you were a betting man right now, I guess, would you say the NFL gets in a full season in 2020?
I would. I think they are going to do it. I heard today possible rumors, and things are just flying around too, that the Super Bowl would be moved till the end of February and, yeah, maybe an October start to push things back a little bit. So there's different ways to do it. Remember, the NFL offseason is so long that you have a bit of flexibility. So it would limit maybe some downtime for players, push back things like the combine, maybe the draft even further. But there is that wiggle room. It's not as tight as, let's say, the NFL or the NBA or NHL, where they have to go 82 games, or baseball, for that reason, 162. You got 16 turning into 17 games the following year. And so it's a case where the NFL's in a good spot where if you start it a little later, you can still put in a full season. I think changes are going to have to be to those international games. Like, I think it would be absolutely ridiculous if they still went over to London or Mexico and all that. You have to try to keep this thing as contained as possible. And really, if you are going to play in front of empty stadiums, it doesn't make sense to go to those locations really anyway. So that would be the one big change I could see for 2020, where all those international games kind of get punted to the next year.
He is Andy McNamara of Sportsnet, joining us for all things NFL draft and a look potentially at the impact some of these rookies could have in a fantasy football world in 2020. I think everyone coming in was looking at the receivers in round one, Andy. What was going through your brain, I guess, as you saw a guy like CeeDee Lamb drop to the Cowboys at 17?
Yeah, I thought that was a fascinating pick for the Cowboys. And credit to them, they went out and they got their secondary help in the second round. So I thought they did feel the need. It must have been a case where they thought, wow, this guy is graded so high on our board. How can we not take him? So now you have Amari Cooper, you have Michael Gallup, you have Ezekiel Elliott, and the top receiver on my draft board, CeeDee Lamb, who is out of this whole group, I think probably the most NFL ready, like just a shade above a Jerry Jeudy. Oh, great hands. The guy averaged over 21 yards per reception as a primary target last year, like 6'2". Catches everything, not as fast as Lamb, but still speed and can quickly separate. Like, he's somebody where you pop him in, all right, if you're a defense, you got to worry about Ezekiel Elliott, who can not just run, but obviously, as we know, catch. You got Amari Cooper on one side, Michael Gallup, you can put on the outside, or you can put CeeDee Lamb there, or you can mix and match them in the slot. And so if you're Mike McCarthy, this is such an extra new toy for you to really get to see. Okay, he's claimed he has a revamped, modernized offense. Well, there's going to be no excuses for Mike McCarthy in Dallas, because you have every toy to deal with that group. And CeeDee Lamb, I think, can be an immediate guy who day one can start turning heads in the NFL.
Yeah, and I think it was your latest Fantasy Minute that might be airing today. I've heard it this morning, and that is on CeeDee Lamb's impact. Because ever since Amari Cooper went there, he's been a fantasy stud. What does this do to the rest of the Cowboys' offense? And can CeeDee Lamb be a guy that, you know, should be coming off draft boards in fantasy drafts later this summer?
Yeah, I think definitely you have to draft. And now when it comes to in these articles, and tomorrow I'll have the release of the rest of the fantasy positions. So quarterback, running back, tight ends coming out of the draft, their landing spots and the impact there. But wide receiver, if you have a stud that can step in, can be an immediate fantasy contributor. So you definitely have to take him, certainly in dynasty and keeper leagues. He's got to be your first wide receiver taken in those formats. But when it comes to an actual 2020 look, I think you still put Cooper first. I'm going to slide CeeDee Lamb ahead of a Michael Gallup just because of the position they took him in and how dynamic he can be. Now, at first I thought, well, okay, is there going to be enough ball to go around? But think about it. You don't have a tight end really that's going to be of any use. Randall Cobb and his old body is shipped out, so he's not going to be hogging any extra targets. So I think there's enough room, and you have versatility to move in either area. So I think a CD Lamb is going to be somebody that you can feel comfortable with in standard or PPR formats for your fantasy team. Now, am I going to draft him ahead of Amari Cooper? No. But this is somebody, you know, heck, I think he has WR2 upside as a rookie on your fantasy club, which is pretty rare when you look at guys just entering the league.
You look at another guy that was picked in the first round, as we talked about so many times, this receiver class is just really, really deep, and there's a lot of impact receivers that likely were taken in the first two rounds of this draft. But one that I think some people were curious about, the head coach obviously loves him. He's got a strong history of drafting receivers. What did you make of Brandon Ayuk to the 49ers?
Oh, yeah. And Kyle Shanahan openly said he was his favorite receiver in this draft, straight up. So when you have a head coach who's usually pretty reserved in Kyle Shanahan making a statement like that, that's pretty exciting. And it's a spot that was needed for the 49ers. Emmanuel Sanders, he's gone. Didn't really do much when he was there. Rib injuries, right? He was banged up quite a bit. Debo Samuel emerged, but really after that, boy, you added Travis Benjamin, who's a speedy flyer. Kendrick Bourne, Dante Pettis, not very exciting. So if you had Brandon Ayuk to Debo Samuel, what people have to remember too is in that Shanahan offense, it is in most cases a two wide receiver set. They focus on tight ends and the running game. So San Francisco led the league in rushing yards and attempts last year. Now, by adding Ayuk, are they going to switch that mindset? No. So if I'm looking at from a real-life football perspective, I love the addition there. He's doesn't really differentiate himself that much from Debo Samuel and, let's say, like a tall guy. He's about 6 feet tall. But again, this is somebody you look for versatility. You can put him outside, inside. You can mix them all around. And when you have that dynamic extra where Debo Samuel can be mixed into gadget plays, you have those two as your number one. So if I'm looking at it from a fantasy side, though, I would only look to Ayuk in PPR formats as a late-round flyer. And somebody probably, again, in Dynasty and Keeper Leagues, you want to look at later on as a pickup just to see how they get used. But it's still, if you think about it, after running the ball, who's going to get the first look in the passing game? It's George Kittle. So you have to take the offense in mind of these receivers, no matter how exciting they were in college, to the offense. And that passing game still begins with George Kittle in San Francisco.
A lot of focus on receivers in this draft, and rightly so. And that's probably the best place to look when you come about an instant fantasy impact. Putting you on the spot a little bit, Andy, but what was your favorite pick, I guess, in the opening round?
So not receiver, but just overall.
Or you can go receiver. I just overall, your favorite pick or the one that you looked at and said, yeah, that is one that's going to work.
I would say the first two obvious ones, Burrow and Young. I'm glad the teams didn't get cute and they just took the best players available on the board. I'd say to me, the best value pick has probably got to be CeeDee Lamb of the Cowboys, just for how far he dropped. And then after that, I see the Jedrick Wills pick by the Browns tackle. I know offensive tackles are not exciting, but that is a guy who the Browns absolutely loved. He protected Tua on the right side. They're going to switch him over. He got the approval of future Hall of Famer Joe Thomas and said he's going to tutor him. So when you get that at 10 and the Browns are able to stay put, get their left tackle immediately with open tutelage of a future Hall of Fame left tackle as the NFL's all-time consecutive snap streak, I think that's a great pickup. I'll tell you probably my least favorite first-round pick, if I can go there, is with the Philadelphia Eagles and Jalen Reagor. I just thought that was it was a total miss by Philly in that first round. You have Justin Jefferson on the board, who the Vikings, I'm sure, were doing cartwheels, and if there was a podium to run to, they would have sprinted up afterwards. They get Justin Jefferson, who's a bigger body guy. That's another one of my favorites, too. I think he's right in the proper landing spot, Justin Jefferson. But he replaces Stephon Diggs on the outside opposite Adam Thielen. Big catch radius. Oh, just he would have been perfect for the Philadelphia Eagles. Instead, you get Jalen Reagor, who's pretty much a slot guy. And I know he's pull away speed and he's fast, but to me, Will, he's a guy. Like, you could have gotten Devin Duvernay in the third, fourth round where the Ravens took him. same type of player. I personally like Duvernay better. You could have gotten a slot receiver later and taken a bigger, more dynamic playmaker who can stretch the field more instead of just being a slot receiver. Not to say Rieger can't have a nice role in that offense, but still, for Carson Wentz, okay, you got DeSean Jackson, he's always injured. Alshon Jeffrey is a shell of his former self. Okay, they're still on the roster. Can you count on them? No. So now you still have the two tight ends and a pretty good backfield. So Jalen Rieger was the most disappointing pick to me for the Eagles, because you had a real shot to add a Justin Jefferson or a T. Higgins, who the Bengals took at the top of the second round, who's another guy, 6'4", right? Like, you have to – can you give Carson Wentz some weapons? So Jalen Rieger, from a fantasy side, I'm not interested. PPR only, and that's somebody who I think as a max rookie upside, maybe a flex you rotate in on bye weeks. But I'm not very bullish on the fantasy impact of Jalen Rieger at all.
He is Andy McNamara of Sportsnet, all things fantasy football and fantasy sports. And, of course, for the purpose of this conversation, the NFL draft. It's funny you said Eagles and followed that up with Jalen. I thought you were going to say Jalen Hurts. That pick shocked many people. Is this them not believing in the durability of Carson Wentz? How do you read the pick of Jalen Hurts to the Philadelphia Eagles?
Yeah, so keep with the Eagles. Yeah, now, Will, we talked about it on the show before that I had Jalen Hurts from a career standpoint. If he lands in a proper spot, I think you're going to have the second best pro career out of this NFL quarterback draft class next to Joe Burrow. And the reason is it's not – people talk about, oh, they'll have like a Taysom Hill, a gimmick guy. If they use him and see him only as that, that is a huge mistake. He's fast. He can run. Dude can throw. And I think from a quarterback development standpoint with Doug Peterson, he's landed in a great spot. I will say this. This is my bold prediction. Carson Wentz has been put on notice, big contract or not. If he gets injured, if Carson Wentz suffers a longer-term injury again, let's say midseason, well, he might not get his job back. That's how good Jalen Hurts can be. So it's a spot where, do I love the quarterback in the situation? Yes. But for the Eagles, who really, for the amount of money they paid Carson Wentz and not that far removed from a Super Bowl, should be more in win-now mode, boy, I would have taken a positional player that could help you. First, a better wide receiver in round one, and then gone maybe to the defensive side or just something else to help the team now. Much like the Green Bay Packers taking Jordan Love, this is a move that does not help the Eagles win now.
Yeah, and as you mentioned it, Jordan Love, not only with that pick, just overall, not many coming away impressed with the Packers' work at the draft weekend. I would guess you're in that same camp, and if you're Aaron Rodgers, are we going to have a similar situation? And we had a couple of guys on early this week and even last week that say that this thing could end ugly with Rodgers and the Packers. What's your read there?
That's kind of funny. He got Brett Favre, right? It ended ugly for the Packers and Favre. Took years to rebuild that relationship. And I wonder how Aaron Rodgers sees this, because it's obviously, it mirrors the Favre situation. And he was always, hey, I want to have a relationship with Brett. And he was kind of, it was a cold shoulder and they've mended fences. How does he treat Jordan Love? Because unlike Favre, who was kind of banting around retirement and was closer to the end, where at that time anyway, then he had that little resurgence after with Minnesota and all that, which was fun. But for Rodgers, 36, I understand you wanted to draft your quarterback and especially somebody who has the raw skills, and if you're high on him, you can sit him. I get it. If I'm Aaron Rodgers, I'm furious, because this is a spot where you could have added an impact now player, much like the Eagles, right? You're in – anytime you have Aaron Rodgers, you're a championship – a conference championship contender immediately. You didn't get him a wide receiver of note. In the second round, you got A.J. Dillon, a running back. Did Aaron Jones go away? Did Jamal Williams vanish? You had a third guy. That's a luxury pick, Will. You took two luxury picks in this draft that do absolutely nothing to help the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers win now. If I'm Aaron Rodgers, I am pissed. Because, okay, cool, you got Jordan. What does that do? Or how did you make us a better team for 2020? What happened with it? and they didn't. They got a tight end to, like, okay, Josiah DeGuara. Anybody buying DeGuara jerseys in Green Bay? I don't think so. Also, fantasy irrelevant with DeGuara. It's a draft, Will, that it's curious to me. I don't really know. It's a more of a future build when you have a right now opportunity.
And finally, speaking of the deep receiver class, we should focus in on the Canadian kid who you absolutely love.
Oh,
and
yeah.
If there's one team who knows how to draft receivers, it's the one in Pittsburgh. Is there a better landing spot for Chase Claypool of Abbotsford, BC than the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Oh, well, absolutely broke my heart. It was funny. I said to my wife, we were watching the, she was on her phone, not paying attention, but she was saying,
you were watching, she was sitting with you on the couch. That's what it was.
Exactly. And I said, with the Pitts, I just said literally two picks before, I'm like, I wonder where Chase Claypool's going. I'm like, anywhere but Pittsburgh, anywhere. I'm a Browns fan. Don't do this to me. Pittsburgh Steelers take him. Oh, and yes, it is. And I wrote about this in the sportsnet.ca article that's up now, literally just now, about the fantasy football fallout for wide receivers. It's a great spot, not just for Claypool, but also for Juju Smith-Schuster. On the depth chart right now, it is James Washington ahead of Claypool on the depth chart. Claypool should leapfrog Washington, no problem. So Roethlisberger comes back from this elbow. You got Juju as your one. You got Claypool, who, we talked about, 6'4", 238, runs a 4.4240, can jump out of the stadium on vertical balls. You can put him in the slot as a mismatch nightmare against linebackers or red zone, and he's got the speed on the outside. Juju Smith-Schuster, to get back to his 2018 form of a 1,000-plus yard receiver, needs a complementary option, needs another player to have the attention taken away. Claypool can be that draw. You can then move Washington, let's say, to the slot or somewhere as a third option. And all of a sudden, defenses might not know where to look. So this move to Pittsburgh helps not only Claypool, it also helps Juju Smith-Schuster. And if I'm looking at fantasy guys, I think we see Claypool probably take a similar arc to, let's say, a DK Metcalf, where mid-season he started to really come on, got used to the NFL game, and then started to take off and be fantasy relevant from that mid-season point. Claypool is an absolute for dynasty and keeper leagues. You got to get him. And for the season, try to pick him up near the end of your draft and stash him for a bit on the bench and just kind of see how he develops. Because again, I think kind of mid-season, we start to see him get used to the program and really pull away with those elite X factors of an athlete.
And I know he's got the speed, so maybe this question isn't necessarily – it's an easy answer for you. Not necessarily going to make you think. But is there a chance that Claypool ends up being a tight end in his career?
I think that would be a mistake. I don't think you have to pigeonhole him. And that's where – going into the combine, that's where, oh, he's a big guy, he's a tight end. You can – in today's NFL, the offenses are so creative. Like we've seen in the past, Jimmy Graham popped out to the outside. Hopefully not modern Jimmy Graham. Bears also. Awful draft, but side point to that. But then, for Claypool, like, here's the thing, Will. For Claypool, you want to line him up in a out of the slot where a tight end, beside a tight end, where a tight end might go, do it. Mismatch nightmare. But why would you stymie a guy in that one spot when you can move him all over that line, outside, inside, to receive, whatever. You can put him anywhere, and he demands attention with that size, burner speed, but also the physicality and good hands. He was a Notre Dame Fighting Irish. He's a team MVP and a bowl game MVP. I don't think he's getting enough credit. And again, watch out mid-season and onward. This guy, I think, if he can stay healthy and Big Ben does, fantasy stud coming at you.
As we wrap things up today, Andy, I got to ask you, because there's this momentum out there, and as a New York Jet fan, really, it just completely fears me, and I hope it never happens. But there's this thought out there. Of course, they did not take a quarterback in this year's draft, New England, that is. They're going to go with Jared Stidham, who we both know is not good. there's a thought out there that they're going to just take their lumps in 2020 and gear up for a run at Trevor Lawrence, which would really just heartbreak us all.
Here's the thing. I just don't feel Bill Belichick is programmed that way. I just don't see him, because remember, Bill Belichick is a student of history. He loves, and as grumpy as he is, he loves NFL history. He is a student. He wants that all-time win record that Don Shula has. You're not going to get that going 2-14, right? And the team itself, the defense is still good enough to probably have you at around 500.
Especially in that division,
In that division, right? Like, okay, 8-8. So you missed the playoffs. Like, I don't see them bottoming out at all.
You might win the division with 8-8.
You might win the damn division, right? Like, it's a situation where he's not programmed that way. That's not the Patriot way, and you'd have to do a culture shift that he's won too much doing it the other way. So I don't see them doing that, and they don't really have enough future draft capital to make a play up to number one unless they get real, real ridiculous. And again, that has not been their MO. I'm with you. I'm not a believer in Jarrett Stidham at all. But heck, maybe they try game managing it and limping along and see how it goes.
Well, yeah. I mean, let's be honest. It wasn't like Brady in 2019 was Tom Brady of 2010 or 2011. Yeah. So they got by on a good defense and a lackluster offense last year. We'll see what 2020 brings. Andy, good stuff as always, man. Really appreciate your time. Look for his stuff on Twitter at AndyMC81. You can also go to sportsnet.ca. As he said, part one today and part two later this week, Andy?
Yeah, part two should be out tomorrow with the quarterback, tight end, and running back fantasy football follow-up from the draft.
And, of course, the Fantasy Minute Daily brought to you by Domino's Pizza. Good stuff as always, Andy. We'll talk to you very soon, man. Take care.
Absolutely. Thanks, brother. Talk to you.